Good morning. Today's daf in Yuma, Chaf Aleph. We are on the very top of Chaf Aleph Amud Aleph. We are going to be starting three lines down with the words Tanya. Tanya Kavase de Rebbe Shila. We are in the middle of the Gemara's discussion. Yesterday we quoted two brises. Well, yesterday we quoted one brisa, and today's the second, and it has to do with the Lashon HaMishnah. The Mishnah talked about Kriyas HaGever. So Kriyas HaGever is when the Mitzvah Truma Sedeshin is generally done, aside from Yom Kippur and aside from Yantiv. So, but normally the time to do the mitzvah of Trumas Hadeshin is at the point of Kriyas HaGever. So the point of Kriyas HaGever, so we were never abundantly clear, meaning the Mishnah wasn't abundantly clear, but probably the most correct way to describe it is sometime right immediately before dawn, pre-dawn. So is the time to do Trumas Hadeshin. What is Trumas Hadeshin? So yesterday we went through a brief description of what the mitzvah of Trumas Hadeshin is. So go back to yesterday's daf. Anyway, but a technical discussion that really covers half of yesterday's daf and a good portion of today's daf, not a good portion, but some portion of today's daf, and that is the term Kriyas HaGever. What exactly does that mean? So there are two explanations, Rav and Rav Shila. So Rav says Kriyas HaGever, the word Gever comes from the word Gaver, which means a person, and that there was a veker, there was a person who called out and he told everybody it's time to get going. So that is one. And we quoted a Mishnah yesterday in Shkalim. It's not a Mishnah in Shkalim, but anyway, Gvini Cruz. So he was really good at it. Was able to call out three parses in length. Okay, that's approximately 9 miles. It's amazing. And then there's the other pshat. The other pshat is Reb Shila. Reb Shila says that the Kriyas HaGever is referring to a rooster crows. Again, the Gemara itself is never clear as to whether or not. We're talking about there's any kind of time differential between the Peshat of Rav and the Peshat of Rav Shila. There very well may be, but the Gemara never discusses it. But nevertheless, those are the two Peshatim that are offered. It's either going to be a reference to a person or to a rooster. So Rav's Peshat yesterday we focused on. We spent time with his Peshat that it was talking about a person, and now we're going to be focusing on the Peshat of Rav Shila. So that's where we begin today. So Tan Kavasa de Rav Shila, Yosel Derech Chodim Kriyas HaGever, Dama Barosho. So let's say you leave on route, and you go before the Kriyas HaGever. So you leave early, too early. It's still nighttime. So at that point in time, Dama Barosho, so you're responsible. Meaning if anything bad happens to you, so that's on you. And Rashi over here writes it really strongly. Rashi says, Avon Moso Al Rosho. So, it's not hyperbole, and Rashi says it pretty clearly. It's suicide to leave that early. And what's the concern? What's the problem? So you take a look at the previous Rashi. Rashi says Dama Barosho Mimnei Hamazik. And Rashi also in Rashi's Girsi he adds a word Hayotzi Yechidi Laderech. You're going out on your own, meaning you're not accompanying, you're not being accompanied by anybody, and so therefore you make yourself very vulnerable to Mazikin. As we've gone through numerous Gemaras, so the Mazikin are something to look out for. They're a dangerous group, and it's therefore you're really taking your life into your own hands. Rabbi Yoshi Amar Achi Yishana. Rabbi Yoshi says it's not enough to hear the rooster crow once; he's got to crow two times. V'yesh Amar Achi Shalish. And third opinion is that the rooster's got to crow three times then, and only then is it safe to go out. Ovez Tarnagol Amar B'Tarnagol Beinoni. Now, in terms of which rooster we're talking about, the average rooster. Now, obviously, I have no idea what we're talking about over here, average rooster. But basically, back in the day, it was well known. It was well understood. What kind of rooster is crowing at what point in time? And so when you have the average rooster crowing once, twice, or even three times, then and only then is it safe to go out. Amrav Yehuda, Amrav Vishashi, Yisrael, Olin, Lerego, Omdim, Tzfufim, Mishachim, Mervachim, V'nimshachin, Achas, Esrei, Amma, Achare, Beis HaKapara. So the Gemara now is going to be spending the rest of today's daf focusing on some of the more amazing, miraculous things that occurred during the period of the Beis HaMikdash. There will be a point, once again, today's daf, where we're going to making a distinction between the first and the second Beis HaMikdash. It's not clear, totally, which Beis HaMikdash we're describing. If we're talking about Nisim, it's much more mistaper to say that we're talking about the first Beis HaMikdash and not the second Beis HaMikdash, but regardless, we are going to be spending the rest of today's daf. It's a really enjoyable daf, but it's going to be almost all Agadata, highlighting the difference between the first and the, highlighting the Nisim that occurred during the period of the Batei Mikdash. So Rav Yehuda Merav is quoted over here. It's not totally clear what the segue is between the discussion of the rooster and all these Gemaras that we're about to do right now. And it's okay. I'm not sure if I really know what the connective tissue is, but certainly the point is, however, is that they're just really enjoyable Gemaras to learn, to listen to. Okay, it's easy listening today. So Rav Yehuda Merav says that at the time when the Yisrael were olal rego, so what we are able to do is omdim tzfufim. So we stood up right, and we were basically shoulder to shoulder. But what we were also able to do is that when we bow down, there's still room enough for everybody to bow down. So obviously that's an ace, meaning obviously when you bow down, that's going to be that you require more square area in order to bow down. And if we're already shoulder to shoulder, so how is everybody going to bow down? Okay, so we're going to see that a lot of the nisim that occurred in the Beis Hamikdash is that we bend the laws of linear measurement, right? There's generally speaking, linear measurement is an exact science, and meanwhile, these laws get to be broken in the Beis Hamikdash. So the Beis Hamikdash is a place that is a little bit above space. Okay. The v'nimshach me'acharas re'ama achorei beis hakaparas. The end of the statement of Rav Yehuda Merav is that it also covers the last 11 amas that are behind the kaparas, behind the western wall. Okay, I say the western wall, I mean the western wall of the Heichal, right? Not to be confused with our modern reference of the western wall. So we know that beyond the western wall of the Heichal until the western wall of the Azara are 11 amas. We just covered that recently in the Daf in terms of the floor plan of the Beis Hamikdash. So my comma, now the last statement over there, what did that have anything to do with what we're discussing? So hachi comma, the Gemara says, I'll tell you what it has to do. Afa pishin imshach and acharasrei ama achorei beis hakaparos va'omdim tzfufim kishem mishachvim revachim. So the Gemara says, is that, look, when the Azara was filled in, now when was the Azara filled in? Well, we already got a sneak peek in our Mishnah yesterday's Daf, where on Yantiv, so the Azara would be totally packed with people. Azara already by the morning, by Kriyas Hagever, so the Azara was totally filled in. So we already got that sense from our mission yesterday. So, okay, so it could very well be what we're describing over here. And the point is that every nook and cranny, every corner of the Azara was filled in. You can even go behind the western wall of the Heichal, between the 11 Amas, between the Heichal and the western wall of the Azara, and you're still going to find people over there. And so basically it was packed with people shoulder to shoulder. And meanwhile, what would happen is that when we stood, we were standing shoulder to shoulder. And yet when we bowed down, so revach, there was room. Everyone had room in order to bow down. And these are one of 10 miracles that occurred in the Beis HaMikdash. Okay. And we're going to enumerate. Did not. And we have a Mishnah over here. It's a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. So we're going to learn the Mishnah. I'm going to spend a little bit of time with the Mishnah. And that really will be the first half of today's daf, even a little bit more than the first half of today's daf. Okay, as far as this particular nace is concerned, so what is the advantage? Well, aside from the advantage aside from the idea that, you know, everyone had a little bit of room, but why specifically this particular nace? So there's a really interesting Rashi over here. Rashi says, Mishtachavim Revachim. Rashi's just about where we are in the Gemara, a little bit above that. But Rashi writes, Mishtachavim Revachim, Kim Mishtachavim Menoflim, arba amos. So first of all, Rashi expands that with the actual miracle. Rashi says that basically everyone got four amos when they bow down. So Rashi's description over here is that what's going to happen is that when we're bowing down, so we're doing vidui. And so what we don't want is we want other people to hear. So everyone's going to be given a little bit of space so that they can say their vidui and no one else is going to hear them. That's the Rashi's understanding of why the miracle is necessary. It is a little bit confusing because I thought we were talking about Yantiv over here. That's certainly the impression you got from the Mishnah. And if we're talking about Yantiv, you're not doing Vidu on Yantiv. And if we're talking about Yom Kippur, right, Yom Kippur is not described as people flooding the Azara on Yom Kippur. Generally speaking, on Yom Kippur, yes, there was a crowd of people there. We're going to be discussing it later on. But in the Azara, a flood of Jewish people on Yom Kippur. And if we're talking about Yantiv, I didn't know Vidui was part of the Yantiv procedure. In fact, I would have thought Vidui is not part of the Yantiv procedure, meaning Yantiv is a time of Simcha, and it's not really a time that we should be focusing on our Chataim. Okay, so as you can see, I'm confused. Meaning, so it's a great Rashi. It certainly makes it tells us what the significance is. I'm just not sure when we're describing it over here. On Yom Kippur, on Yom Tov. Okay, so yeah, but there wasn't this flood of people, right? When was this flood of people? Okay, good. I'm fine. I'm sorry. I'm just this is a Mishnah Pirkei Avos, so the classic Mefarshim on the Mishnah Pirkei Avos, and I'll get through this. It's going to be a little bit tough for me to say it right now, but the Rabbeinu Yonah right there on the Mishnah Pirkei Avos. I know it's really raw. So, but Rabbeinu Yonah says is that you don't have to go. I mean, he doesn't quote the Rashi, but he says you don't have to go so far as Rashi. Meaning, what's the pshat? The pshat is that there's such a flood of people over there, and nobody gets hurt. And he says, and that's the nes. And unfortunately, it's whatever. It's hard. Just to think about it, but Rabbeinu Yonah says that's an ace in of itself. Okay. We go back to the Mishnah over here. So the Vizevizech HaMe'asar Nisim. Okay, did nine. So good. So now we're going to go through the Mishnah Pirkei Avos. So Asar Nisim and Nasa Beis HaMikdash. So there were 10 miracles that occurred in the Beis HaMikdash, and so we're going to go through them right now. Now, basically, what we're going to do is that we're going to go through the Mishnah Pirkei Avos. But as you know, this happens all the time. We have accounting issues because the Mishnah tells us that there are 10. By the way, the same group of Mishnayos that tells us that there were 10 Nisyonos that occurred with Avram Avinu, 10 generations going from Adam to Noach and from Noach to Avraham. So, in other words, right, the number 10 over there in those Mishnayos. So there are 10 miracles that occur in the Beis HaMikdash. So what we're going to do is we're going to go through the Mishnah, but we're also going to keep an eye on the number 10. Because as we go through the Mishnah, we're going to realize that it's not really 10. And so the Gemara is going to do its standard accounting practices of how do we get to the number 10?
This is going to have English 1 and 2 or just...
Unclear. Unclear. Okay, it's a fair question. It's a Mishnah, which means that it was authored after the second base of Mikdash, or not authored, but edited after the second base of Mikdash. So, but it's really unclear. It is more, if I had to take a guess, which is what I'm doing right now, I'd say more the first base of Mikdash than the second base of Mikdash. We know the first base of Mikdash had more. That part we know. But okay, so the Lo'i Pilu Isha Merech Basar HaKadosh. So we're going to go start now counting it off. Number one, so there was a really, really strong barbecue smell coming out of the base of Mikdash, and these strong smells back in the day, I mean nowadays as well, but back in the day, these strong smells really affected a woman and her pregnancy, and so a strong smell could really endanger the life of her fetus. So never happened in the Beis HaMikdash. That's one. Number two, Lo Yisrich Basar HaKadosh Me'olam. Meat never spoiled. Obviously, that's a Nes Nigla. It's a revealed miracle. So that never happened. Number three, Lo Nira Zvuv Beveis HaTabachim. So you had cut meat, fresh cut meat, and there were no flies there whatsoever. Again, a Nes Nigla. Number four, all of them are Nisim Nigla. Number four, Lo Ira Keri LeKohen Gadol B'Yom HaKippurim. So the Kohen Gadol never becomes a Baal Keri on Yom Kippur. Now, we spent an entire parak going through great pains describing everything we would do in order to prevent this to happen. So I know it's interesting. The Mishnah calls it a miracle. And meanwhile, it's a miracle that at least we saw in our Mishnah, we spent a lot of time avoiding. We keep him up the whole night in order to avoid him becoming a Baal Keri. And yet the Mishnah calls it a nes. Okay, it's like humbling for the Kohen Gadol. Like, right? Can you imagine? Kohen Gadol goes through this procedure every year, and it's a lot of work. And then afterwards, they're like, oh, you know what? That's an ace. What? Nace? You know, you're right. You know how much? Whatever. Okay. Anyway, the Mishnah calls it an ace. Number five, Alon Nimsa Psul Ba'omer V'Shtei Alechem V'Alechem Upon Him. And there was never a disqualification that's found by the Karban Omer, by the Shtei Alechem and the Lechem Upon Him. Now, Rashi points out over here, first of all, as we're going to see, right, I already gave away the answer. I call that number five, even though I rattled off three things. But right, you could see already, as far as the grouping is concerned, right, they're grouped together. And in terms of the accounting, we're going to count that as one. So we're going to count that as number five. Anyway, Rashi points out over here, it's really significant that they don't become disqualified. Why? Because all these items went through a process, right? Let's take the Omer as an example. So the Omer has a process in which the night prior to the Omer, so we do the harvesting, right? The Ksiris Omer. We discussed this at length in the seventh parak of Menachos. And then what we do is that we harvest the necessary amount of barley in order to make the Karban Omer So that the next day, now we have the carbon omer. Now, if a psul were to happen to it, now what do? We go back to the drawing board? We can't. We can't go back to last night, right? The space is able to, you know, be manipulated in the Beis HaMikdash, but, you know, not time. So we can't go back to last night, and we can't do the harvesting again. And I know, I thought of it as well. So why don't we just harvest some extra? So that in the event that it becomes psul, so then we'll have more. But that's not how it works. In terms of the harvesting of the omer, so you only harvest the amount that's necessary that you need. So if the omer were to become psul, so then, yes, obviously we'll have to start again, but we're not going to be able to get back the harvesting of the previous night. And so the sheil lechem and the lechem upon him, so they all go through a process. So it's really important that once we start the process, they don't become disqualified, and that makes for nes number five. Nes number six, omdim tzufim u'mashachim u'revachim. Everyone stood shoulder to shoulder, and then when we bowed down, there was room for everybody. Number seven, lo hizik nachash v'akrab yushlaim e'olam. So nobody was bitten by a snake or a scorpion in the base of, in, now I was going to say the base of Mikdash, so I'm about to correct myself, it's Yerushalayim. So, and the Gemara is going to make the comment. You know, I thought we were counting 10 miracles in the base of Mikdash. So, okay, so it's a miracle, but here we're talking about Yerushalayim. This shouldn't count. So hold that thought. And lo amar adam l'chaver, tzali amakam, sheilim b'Yerushalayim. And then number, whatever. It's, I'll call it number eight, but really, you know already that we stopped counting. So the, and that is, no one ever complained about the food and the hotel in Yerushalayim. Okay, it's a miracle. Yeah, I know. I was thinking it also. I didn't want to say it, but okay. Yes. Good. Okay. The problem of saying the daf in a live crowd, right? Everyone reads my mind. Okay, so the pasuk b'mikdash v'siyim v'Yerushalayim. So here's the problem. The problem is that we're starting in the base of Mikdash, and now we end in Yerushalayim, meaning the accounting issue. I mean, the Mishnah tells us that there are going to be 10 miracles that we're going to go through in the base of Mikdash, and the last two have nothing to do with the base of Mikdash. It has to do with Yerushalayim, and it's just an accounting issue. And on top of that, we're already, like, you know there are more problems, because there really aren't, even if I took those two out, there really aren't a remainder of eight, because the psul is really just one. And I counted it up. I'm into this. So I can, and the Gemara is obviously as well. I counted it up. It comes out to like a total of like six right now. You know, take away the Yerushalayim miracles, consolidate all the psulim into one, and it really comes down to six. So ika tarte achrenaisa b'mikdash t'tanya. So the Gemara says, okay. So this Mishnah and Perkei Avos has to be supplemented, and we are going to do that right now, supplementing it with a brisa. We learned in a brisa me'olam lo. Lo chavu gushamim eish shel eitz amaracha v'ashan amaracha afilu kol aruchu sheba olam baos menashvos bo ein mezizos usamim kamo. So the Gemara says, okay, so we're going to give you two more miracles. Number one is that you just think about it. By the way, it's amazing. Like, it's just easy to realize that the mezbeach chitzon is outside. It's in the courtyard, and there's a fire burning all the time, and it rains. Now, granted, in Eretz Yisrael, it rains only half the year, but still, half the year it rains. And so a good rain landing right on the Mizbech, so you don't think the fire is going to go out. So Bederech HaTeva, it should go out. And so one of the miracles described in the Brei says that it doesn't go out. Number two, also it could get windy. So when it gets windy, so you can only imagine now that the smoke that goes up, so the smoke is going to get scattered by the wind. So no, the pillar of smoke goes up from the Mizbech, and it continually goes straight up, even against the wind. It's still going to go straight up. And these are two Nisim Niglos. They're open miracles. So Vesuleka, the Gemara says, okay. So now what we've done is that we think we got to the number 10. Because right now, just in terms of the accounting, the Gemara thinks that the psulim of the Mishnah Perkei Avos are each one individual. And so that gets us to the number 8. And we just supplemented with two more from the Breisa. So that's numbers 9 and 10. So the Gemara says, wait 1 second. We have a little bit more accounting to do for today. V'atanya Rav Shmaya Bikalnabo, it seems to be his name or where he's from. So Shiver Kli Cheres Nivlam Bim Komo. Let's say we have Kli Cheres that needs to be broken, right? If we have a Kli Cheres that absorbed any of the Psule Karban, so it becomes now it's been rendered psul, therefore you must break it. You break it in the Azara, and it just gets swallowed on the ground. Also, additional to that, you have the parts of a bird ola, the mara v'notzah, and also the dishon mizbeach, right? The ashes of the mizbeach, the interior mizbeach, and also the ashes of the menorah, where basically they're put onto the floor, and they just absorb right into the ground, and so we don't have to worry about disposal. It just goes right into the ground. So the Gemara says, okay, so now we got a lot of miracles and we have a little bit of accounting to do. So the Gemara goes through the accounting. So psulit tlasa hava chashbenei bechad. Okay, so the Gemara says, now we're going to do what I already told you what we're going to do. And that is we're going to go to that Mishnah Pirkei Avos. We're going to take the three psulim, the psul of the omer, the shealechem, and the lechem apani, meaning they never became psul. So we take those and we consolidate that into one. Apik trei v'ayil trei. So now that takes two away, and we're going to add the two that we learned in the Braisa together, right? The fire never going out, and the pillar of smoke never getting blown by the wind. So okay, ihachi bluim nami trehavu chashbeniu bechad. So chasur lahu. So the Gemara says, okay, but as long as now we're in the world of accounting and the world of consolidation, so really the last two that we just learned about the clay cheres getting absorbed into the ground and the Mara Venosa getting absorbed into the ground, so that really should count only as one. And so what that does now is that with all the consolidation, so we're pretty close to being there. We're at nine now. But again, the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos told us there are going to be 10. So how do we get to the number 10? So the Gemara says, I'll tell you how. So Ikanami Achrita Damar of Yeshua Malevi, Neizka Dohaya Nasa, Nasa B'lechem Apanim, Siluko Kisiduro. Okay, so a miracle we're all familiar with. We heard this a number of times throughout Shas. But here we go. And that is that the lechem upon him came out warm, sitting on the shulchan, in the base of Mikdash, in the Heichal, for a full week, even a little bit more than a week. It was baked before Shabbos. So that means to say that when we're taking it out, it's 8, 9, sometimes 9, sometimes 10. Remember the Mishnah? Days before it was taken off the table. And yet, it came out piping hot. So Shenamar, Lasum Lechem Cham, or Lasum Lechem Chom, B'yomi Lecho. So the pasuk describes how it comes off hot off the shulchan. So that's another nace. And so now we're going to add that to our list in Pirkei Avos. So the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says that there are 10 miracles in the base of Mikdash. So okay, so we invested some time in terms of putting together the Mishnah with some brisas and another brisa and consolidating a couple of categories together, and eventually we got to the number 10. Okay, this is okay. This is the accounting of the of the Gemara in today's daf. Vesuleika, the Gemara says, okay, now you really cannot think of another miracle. The Gemara says, I can think of many more miracles that occurred in the base of Mikdash. And why have we gotten to the end of the list? We shouldn't be at the end of the list. There should be more. The Hamar Rebbe Leva, Davazem, Misuras, Biadil, Mavasinu, Makom Aron, Enum, and Amida. So the Makom Aron, meaning if you do the math, and we're going to do this later in the Masechta as well, you do the math, and where is the Aron going to be located? Meaning you take the dimensions of the actual area of the Kodesh HaKadoshim itself and figure out now the space in front and the space behind and the space to the right and to the left. And you're going to find now that where is the Aron actually physically located? There's no space for the Aron. There's no space for the Aron. So where's the Aron? So again, so the bending of space occurs in the base of Mikdash. And this is a classic example, and we're all familiar with it. So the Amar Rabbanai, Amar Shmuel, Kruvim and Esa Yomdim, and the same thing can be said regarding the Kruvim. Meaning that when you talk about the wingspan of the Kruvim, so then the actual physical forms of the Kruvim themselves, so space-wise, there was no room for the Kruvim themselves after you factor the wingspan. And once again, the Gemara says that's wonderful. That's another way where we're bending space in the area of the Kodesh HaKodashim.
Do you know that was true also for Bet-Hamikdash 1, first language, or no? We only have the dimensions of the second Bet-Hamikdash,
right? Yeah. No, we also have the dimensions of the first as well. So I certainly assume it's one, maybe two as well. Look, there was no Aron in the second base of Mikdash. So
okay.
So Nisa Debrai Kachashiv, Nisa Degavai Lo Kachashiv. So the Gemara says we're going to make a distinction between the Nisim that occurred inside versus the Nisim that occurred outside, meaning that the Mishnah Pirkei Avos is only counting the Nisim that are revealed to everybody. So yeah, so there were other miracles that occurred in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, notably the bending of space that we just described over here. But that's fine, but the Mishnah Pirkei Avos is not counting that. simply because it's not, people don't see that. So we hachi lechem apanim nami, anisa de gavayhu. So the Gemara says lechem apanim. Who's going into the heichal? Who's seeing the lechem apanim coming off of the shochan piping hot? So the Gemara says that's not a question. The Gemara says lechem apanim nisi de brayhu. No, people do see it. The Amar Reish Lakish, my dichsev al shochan atahor. So we're going to go back to the parsha that we read yesterday, Parsha Semor, the end of Parsha Semor. So the Torah describes that's the shochan atahor. You know the shochan which can become tameh, and we have to make sure that it's tahor. The shochan can become tameh. How in the world does that happen? So al shochan atahor tahor michal shu tameh. And the Gemara now asks, as we turn to the Amud Beis, kli eitz haasuye lanachas uvechol kli eitz haasuye lanachas and a makabel tuma. So as a general rule, when you have a kli that is not being moved, it's a stationary kli and it's going to stay put in one location. It's not, it's just simply not makabel tuma. Rashi on the top of the Amud provides the drasha that gets us to this halacha. We're not going to go through the Rashi right now, but basically that's the halacha, that a kli is only going to be makabel tuma. It is something which you pick up and move. So the shochan, who's picking up the shochan? Who's moving the shochan? And therefore, based on the rules of tuma and tahara, it should never become tameh. So what is the pasuk describing in Parshas Emor that the shochan can become tameh? So the Gemara gives the answer. We hear this answer a couple times throughout Shas. It's the same answer. So v'chol kli is also in a makabel tuma. V'chol is bifnei tuma. And just another detail which I didn't explain, that also it serves as a barrier in front of tuma. Meaning if it's not makabel tuma, so therefore it also serves as a barrier to go ahead and make a break, a chatzitza for tuma. Okay, I explained chatzitza using the word chatzitza. Okay, great educator. So anyway, so the elam alamit shemagbien also la'ola regalim va'omrim lahem. Ru'uchi basam lefnei ha'makam. Shesiluko kisiduro shenem alasom lechem chom v'yomi lachom. So the Gemara says that what we do is that on Yantiv, so we actually, the Kohanim actually pick up the table and they show it to the Olei Regalim. So not just the shochan, but the bread that's on the shochan, and they show the smoking hot bread that's on the shochan, even though it's been sitting there for a week. And basically, they broadcast this nice to the public at large, and so to show part of the kavod and the splendor of the Beis Hamikdash. So this particular nais is shown off to everybody. So the shochan is in fact picked up and displayed. Granted, only a couple times a year, but that doesn't matter. That's enough in order for it to be mekabel tuma. Yeah, correct. Okay, fine. I'm sorry. I just reread all that. Vesuleika, the Gemara says, okay. So, on our list of miracles now, so we think we're locked in at 10, and we've been spending now, right? I told you it was going to be half the daf. It's a little bit more than half the daf. Dedicated to this discussion of how do we keep the number at 10. Again, the Mishnah says it's going to be 10. So we're expecting the number 10. So we've been working now a while on this Mishnah, making sure that it's 10. The Gemara says, "V'amar Rav Oshia, b'shar Shabbat Shlomo beis Hamikdash natabo kol minei megadim shalzava yumotziim perosim bizmanam ukisharuch menashavas behem noshrin shenemar yirash kolavanon piryo chishenichnasu nachrim laechal yavesh." So over here, a very clear description of something that is clearly a miracle, and that is the golden tree producing the golden fruit. Okay, money doesn't grow on a tree. I know that's cliche, right? You've heard that in your life numerous times. Okay, so in the Beis Hamikdash, we beg to differ. So money does grow on tree. In fact, gold grows on tree. Now, what kind of tree are we talking about? So obviously, we're talking about a gold tree. In other words, where else are you going to get golden fruit? So it's going to be produced by a golden tree. So this was planted by Shlomo HaMelech. It can't, right? Really, you can ask me follow-up questions, but I'm not going to be very helpful in terms of giving you any answers. But anyway, so obviously, needless to say, it's a nes nigla that such a tree was planted. Obviously, this is talking about the first base of Mikdash. And when the Nachrim came into the Heichal, so it dried up, meaning that the only one who was going to be benefiting from the golden tree producing the golden fruit is only going to be us. But not the goyim. Shenemar uferach levanon umlal. The asid Hakadosh Baruch Hu lachzir. And Hakadosh Baruch Hu is going to give us back the golden tree producing the golden fruit. Shenemar paruach tifrach v'tagel afkilas v'nan kivor halavanon asanla. Okay, so the pasuk Yeshaya describes that we're going to get it back. Okay, so we have over here is another nes, and so the Gemara says, okay, we're up to now number 11. And the Mishnah Perkava says that there are 10. So Nisi de Kviyala lo kachashiv. So the Gemara says, yeah, but this is a Nes Kavua. Nes Kavua, Rashi says, Kavuim v'omdim tamid bim kaman. So we're talking about things that were like events, miraculous events. A golden tree producing golden fruit, that's kavua, so that doesn't make it to the list. So the Gemara says, hashadas is la'achi. So the Gemara says, okay, so aronu kruvim nami nisi dikviya ninu. So the Gemara says, okay, so this affords us now to go back and to give another answer. You know, we didn't count the Aaron and we didn't count the Kruvim. And now using this Yesod that we just learned together, so it goes back and answers that as well. Because the bending of space in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, that is not an event. It's just simply something that was there and always there. So that's why it's not counted as one of the ten. Amar v'ashen amaracha mi hava ashem b'maracha v'atanya chamishat varim nemru b'esh shel maracha. So the Gemara says, okay, now the pillar of smoke coming off of the big pyre off the Mizbeach. So we described how basically it didn't waver. The wind blew and it still went straight up. The Gemara says, first of all, was there even a pillar of smoke to begin with? So the Gemara says, that we know, we have a tradition. So five things regarding the Eshel Maracha. Number one, Revutza Ka'ari. So crouching like a tiger. Okay, not exactly clear what we're describing over here. Rashi, Revutza Ka'ari, Gachel Shenafla, Mina Shemayim B'Mei Shlomo, V'Aisa, Alam Izbeach, Asheba, Menashe, V'Silka, Haisa Doma Le'ari Rovet. So Rashi gives a description, and it's really just whatever. It's an ace. So so you had some sort of gachela, some sort of coal falling from the sky, and it basically looked like a crouching tiger, or crouching lion, I should say. Okay, good. So that's number one, and it was there historically for a long period of time up until Menashe, right? Menashe, the son of Yeshayahu. Okay, the Gemara does spend a lot of time with him, but the Gemara doesn't over here. Rashi just simply makes mention of it. Anyway, that's number one. Number two, Ubarak Chametz is clear. So son number three, Vyeshba Mamish, it was something that was more tangible. Even the flame itself, which was, that's Rashi's description over here, is something that's more tangible. Okay, I don't know, right, hard, obviously hard to describe, much easier to see. Okay, number four, Ocheles Lachim Ki Aveshim. So it burns everything. It burns both solid and it burns liquid as well. And number five, Eino Mala Ashan. Also no smoke. Okay, so that's a lot of description of this fire of the Mizbech HaChitzim. But obviously number five is that there's no smoke. And meanwhile, the Mishnah Pirkei Avos says that one of the miracles, it's not actually the Mishnah Pirkei Avos, but the supplemental Braisa talks about the miracle about the pillar going straight up. So the Gemara says, okay, everything can be reconciled over here. Ki kamrinan, just one second. Let me just go through the reconciliation. Ki kamrinan bid dehejo. So the Gemara says, no. We're going to make a distinction over here between the fire that we made and the fire that came down from Shemaim, Ditanya, the Braisa says. V'nasim b'nei Aaron ha-kohen ish alam izbeach. So the Gemara says, okay, so there were two fires in which to describe, the fire that came down from Shemayim and the fire that we create. And both were there, meaning both fires were there. And so as far as the fire that came down from Shemayim, so that's that didn't have any pillar of smoke, but the fire that we created, so that did in fact have a pillar of smoke, and we're describing the miracle of the pillar of smoke that we created. Okay.
The pillar of smoke was for Besamim, no? Because they have a special ingredient to make it go straight.
Right, so that was by the Ketores. So by the Ketores they had that. But this is just the fire on the Mizbeach HaChitzon.
Both of them, yeah. Inside and outside, mm-hmm. Like a
column? Yeah, right, correct. So if you see, what's it called? They have these beautiful pictures of the Beis HaMikdash. So if you see, they will show this pillar of smoke coming off the outer Mizbeach. I mean, you know, it's obviously somebody's artistic depiction, but he got it from here. So Revutza Ka'ari, crouching like a lion. So Vatanya Amri Rabbi Chanin is gonna kohanim and Ibri Asiya Revutza Kikalev. So the Gemara says Rabbi Chanin is gonna kohanim. Okay, we saw him back in Pesachim, we saw him again back in Shkalim. Okay, we get to see him again now. And that is, oh, we saw him recently in Yuma as well. Okay. So anyway, so Rabbi Chanin is gonna kohanim. So he says, I saw it and I saw it crouching like a kelev. And this gets back to your original question, by the way. We're talking about the first base of Mikdash, are we talking about the second base of Mikdash? So I think it's both. In other words, obviously we've been describing Shlomo HaMelech and his fire, and now we're describing Rabbi Chanin as kind of Kohanim. He clearly did live during the second base of Mikdash. Okay, so right, it seems to be both. So Lokasha Kamen Mikdash Rishon Kamen Mikdash Sheni. In fact, over here the Gemara now is going to make a distinction because we discussed the Revutza Kari versus the Revutza Kekelev, and the Gemara now makes a distinction between the first and second base of Mikdash. So in the first base of Mikdash, Revutza Ka'ari. Second base of Mikdash, Revutza Kekelev. Okay, and obviously it speaks to the the lower madrega of kedusha that was had by the second base of mikdash. Over mikdash sheni mihave v'amar Rav Shmuel bar Ini my dechsev. Now the Gemara says, now by the second base of mikdash, did you have it at all? So the Gemara says, ve'etzebo ve'achave ve'karinam ba'vi'i kavdam. So the pasuk in Chagai, where the pasuk actually is read e kavda with a hay at the end, but meanwhile the hay, in terms of the ksiv, the hay is left out. So ma'ishan de mechusa hay. So why is the hay left out? So deliberately, intentionally, right? In other words, this is a binyanah for every kriyu ksiv, meaning in the chumash it comes up, and the navi comes up a lot more often, where you have a kriyu ksiv. And what does that mean? There's a kriyu ksiv. And so what the Torah wants to do in the navi and the ksuvim is they want to communicate ideas to us. So here being a wonderful example where it's pronounced e kavda with as if there's a hay at the end, but the hay is missing. So the Gemara says that's a remez. And what's that a remez to? Maisha and the mechusar hay elu chamisha dvarim shayu bein mikdash rishon mikdash sheni ve'elu hayin. So there are five differences between the first and second base of mikdash, and that is aron v'kav paros v'kruvim. So one is that the first base of mikdash had the aron, had the kaparas, and had the kruvim. The second base of mikdash did not. We already know, we went through this in Shkalim in detail, how these items were put into Geniza. They were put into Geniza actually at the end of the first base of Mikdash, right? We credited Chizkiyahu HaMelech. No. Correction. Right? Yoshiyahu HaMelech. We credited with putting into Geniza. Okay. Number one. Number two. Aish. So the fire is going to be a big difference between one and two. And number three, Shechina. Now, right, it's hard to quantify, but the idea is that there was more Shechina in bias number one over bias number two. Number four is Ruach HaKodesh. Okay, now, again, you'll get somebody, not me, to tell you the differences between Shechina and Ruach HaKodesh, okay, above my pay grade. And number five is Urim V'Tumim. And the Urim V'Tumim now, the Urim V'Tumim exists in the first base of Mikdash, but did not in the second base of Mikdash. So the Urim V'Tumim, way I described it in the past, I'm sure, because I'm about to say the same thing. You know, sometimes I just go on autopilot. So the Urim V'Tumim is kind of like the battery pack of the Choshen, right? The Kohen Gadol is part of the eight begadim that he wears. So the Torah describes seven of the begadim, and then the eighth is the Urim V'Tumim. So it's Shem Hashem folded on a paper that's put into the Choshen. Okay, so it's kind of like the battery pack of the Choshen. Now, what makes this discussion interesting, Tosus over here writes, Urim V'Tumim, right? The two short Tosusim on the summit. So Tosus writes over here, so Urim V'Tumim havu she'im lo kein hay kohen gadol mechusa begadim ela lo hayu mishivin l'nishalom behem. So Tosus says over here that there was an actual Urim V'Tumim, because otherwise the kohen would be mechusa begadim. He's not wearing his eight begadim, right? To be a kohen gadol, you have to be donned wearing the eight begadim. So there was the Urim V'Tumim. It's just that the battery was dead, right? In my analogy, right? If you're following. So fine. So it was there, but just simply didn't work. So Amre in Mi'ahavasiyul Misayeh. So the Gemara says, okay. So we'll say like this. There was an Aish in the second base of Mikdash, but the assistance that was given, meaning in the first base of Mikdash, was fire, meaning fire, fire from above, meaning the fire from below. In the second base of Mikdash, you didn't have it, but you did have a fire in the second base of Mikdash with a pillar and a column of smoke. Okay. Tanu Rabbanan Sheishish Eishosein. We got onto the topic of fire, so now we're going to stay on the topic of fire as we're concluding today's daf. And so we are going to be describing six different fires. So number one, Yesho Chalz Veino Shosef, fire that consumes but doesn't drink, Yesho Seh Veino Chalz. We're going to explain each one of them. There's a fire that drinks but doesn't eat, V'yesho Chalz Veino Shosef, a fire that eats and drinks, V'yesho Chalz Lachen Ki Yaveshim. Okay, this is already number four. Fire that eats moist as well as dry, v'yesh eish doche eish, a fire pushing fire, and finally number six, yesh eish ocheles eish, and one fire consuming another fire. So these are the six fires, and we're going to go through all six of them right now. Number one, yesh eish ocheles ve'eno shoseh hadidan. So in other words, fires that you and I are used to, the natural fire. So natural fire is going to consume, but it's not going to, but liquid, as far as liquids are going to concern, it doesn't consume liquid. In fact, just the opposite. You throw water on the fire, puts out the fire. Number two, shosev eino cheles the cholin. Now the fire that drinks but doesn't eat, so that's talking about somebody who's sick. In other words, somebody who's sick is, sort of say the idea over here is that he's got a fire burning inside of him. And so what he does is that he lost his appetite altogether. He doesn't want to eat, but he wants to drink. Okay. Number three, Ochels v'shosa de Eliyahu, eating the fire that eats and drinks. That's the fire of Eliyahu. Eliyahu Bahara Carmel. So you remember on the mizbech that he made. So he made a mizbech that was outside of the Beis Hamikdash, and good, the Gemara speaks about it often. And one of the things that you'll notice, you go through the story in the Navi, so he poured a lot of water on top of it. And meanwhile, the fire went and it went through the water. So the fire went through the water. That was number three. Number four, Ochelos Lachen Kiyaveshim Maracha. The fire of the Maracha is able to burn through both food and liquids as well on the Maracha. So you had not just the carbonos being put on top of it, but also Nesachim being poured on top. Okay, and you had liquids as well. So it went through everything. Number five, Yeshesh Ocheish to Gavriel. So the fire of Gavriel is able to push fire away. Now, what does that mean? Rashi writes over here, Sheyarid Lahatzel, Chananya Mishal Vazarya, Shetzinein es akifsha mi bifnim, vihigdiach mi bechutz, Lusrof es zorkehem, Lusoch gdamir barvi psachim. So we just did it pretty recently, back in the 10th parak of psachim, arvi psachim, and that is the idea that Gavriel himself, made up of Eish, was able to push away the fire, so in order to save Chananya Mishal Vazarya, from the Kivshan Aish. Rashi doesn't say, right? If I had to guess, I would have said yes, but Rashi doesn't say. And number six, V'yesh Esho Chelas Esh to Shechina. And the Esho Chelas Esh, so that is in reference to the Shechina. Da'amar Amar Hoshi Etzbal B'Nayim V'Sarfan. Kadosh Baruch Hu, at a time where he was unhappy with the Malachim. So Rashi over here quotes the Gemara in Sanhedrin. So what happens to be in the fourth paragraph of Sanhedrin, not, right, I kind of would have expected it at the end. But anyway, so, right, the Malachim said, Ma'anosh kisis karenu. The Malachim said, you know, enough with humanity, right? It's a waste of time. And Akash Baruch was very upset and he burnt the Malachim. So that's Eish Ochel Eish. Okay, fine. So that was just a little sidebar on fires. And one more sidebar for today's daf. Now, finally, V'ashana maracha afilu kol arucha sheba olam, Ein mezizas osam mim kaman. Now the pillar of smoke that comes off of the mizbeach, so it doesn't move. So the Gemara says, "What do you mean it doesn't move?" V'amar Yitzchak Brav Dimi b'motzei yom tov achron shalchag kol sofen la'ashana maracha. So now you're at the last day of Sukkot, and everyone wants to see in which direction the pillar on the mizbeach is going to move. And so this is one of the farmer's almanacs, right? The original farmer's almanac. Where if we see which direction the pillar is going to move, we know what kind of season we're going to have. Okay, it happens to be the end of Sukkot, so even to this day, we have a lot of telltale signs of what kind of year we're going to have at the end of Sukkot. Right, Hoshana Rabbah happens to be whatever. Open up a Shulchan Aruch and you're going to find some. If you're not familiar with it, I'm not going to go through it right now, but you're going to find some unusual omens, if you will. And I know we don't. I know. We're not people of omens, but I understand. I just threw out a lot in that couple sentences. But it happens to be that the end of Sukkot is the time that we look towards Simanim. Okay, I'll just leave it at that. So Hakol Sofen LaAshana Maracha Note Kapi Cell Phone Anim Smechem Ali Batam Atzavim. So let's say now. The pillar of smoke coming off the Mizbeach at the end of Sukkot, so it bends to the north. So poor people are going to be happy, and the Baal Batim are going to be sad. Mimneshik Shimo, Shana Maruba, because it means it's going to be a really wet season. It's going to be a wet winter. Upeirseim Markivin. And what's going to happen is that the fruit is going to spoil real quickly. And so that means that the prices are going to be low. And so people who now, on the consumer end, they're going to be the happiest people. On the production side, obviously, their profit's going to be less. Okay. Now, not to copy Darum. Now, if that pillar of smoke going off the Mizbeach, so if it bends to the south, so then Aniyam Atzeim Abale Batam Smechem, and Neshagishim Eshanim Muatim, Uperis Mishtamrim. So over here now, the people on the production side, they're going to be happy. It's going to be a less wet year, a less wet winter. And so therefore, there's going to be a lot more fruit and they're able to preserve the fruit more, and they're going to be able to control the prices. And so, okay, so prices are going to be higher this year. Okay, this is your futures market, right over here. Now to Kapi Mizrach. Now, if the pillar of smoke bends to the east, I call Smechem. Kapi Marav, I call Savim. If it bends to the west, everyone's going to be sad. Anyway, so we're talking about the pillar of smoke bending. So the Gemara gives a wonderful answer. So the Gemara says it's always going to be a pillar. Now the pillar may bend to the north, to the south, to the east, or the west, but it's always going to be a pillar. Meaning normally what happens is that if you have a strong wind going against smoke, so what's going to happen is the smoke is going to scatter. It never scattered. It always remained the pillar. That's what the Mishnah is describing as a miracle. So the Gemara says that our tradition that we just learned, bending to the east, everyone's happy, bending to the west, everyone's sad. In other words, they're right. It strikes either the perfect balance or the imperfect balance, but whatever. East or west, it's going to make everyone on the same playing field. North or south is going to be an uneven distribution of joy. Okay, anyway. So, but the Gemara says, but I have a brisa that says just the opposite. And that is Mizrachis la'olam yafe, ma'ravis olam kasha. If it bends to the east, it's good. And bending to the west, it's bad. And ruach tzfon is yafe, lechitin b'shashe v'yushlish. So, and if it bends to the north, so it's good for the wheat that already is a third ripened. And v'kash lezeisim is manchehem chanutim. And it's bad for the olives when they started budding. And ruach drum is now if it's bending to the south, meaning there's a southern wind. So So it's bad for the wheat, v'yafel azesim, it's manchein chotim, but it's good for the olives. And I'll just give you a really helpful way to remember all this, because that's just a lot of information. V'simancha shochem b'tzafam menorah b'daron. Meaning, take a look at where the placement of the shochan is and the menorah is in the heichal. Shochan's up in the north, and obviously there is bread put onto the shochan, and the bread is made up of wheat, and obviously the menorah is in the south, and obviously we're lighting the menorah with olive oil. So good, fine. Hai marbididei, v'hai marbididei. And obviously the winds going to the north are good for the wheat, and the winds going to the south are good for the oil. Anyway, what comes out over here is that this brisa, or this misara, is different than the previous misara. So lo kasha halan v'halu, so the Gemara says we're fine. Meaning that these simanim are all good simanim, and there's no contradiction whatsoever. It depends on whether or not we're talking about people living in Eretz Yisrael, people living outside Eretz Yisrael. And the last Rashi over here writes Mizrachis yafel aretz bavel she eretz lacha machmas meimah laolam. So the eastern wind is good for bavel. Bavel already is a very fertile region. And Ularit Yisrael Kasha, she Eretz Harim of Akaos, Umemheres Liyavesh. Israel, on the other hand, mountainous. So if you don't have a lot of rain, it's going to dry out pretty quickly. And so so it's just a question of whether we're describing whether it's going to foretell good news or bad news. The answer is yes and yes. And it depends on whether we're describing Bava or whether we're describing Eretz Yisrael. Hadron Lach Shivas. Shivas Yamin, this is now the end of the first parak of the Masechta. In terms of a summary of today's daf, it's really easy. We started off with Rav Shila saying that the Kriyas HaGever is a reference to the rooster. We quoted a brisa supporting the Shita of Rabbi Shila. And then from there, so we launched into a long tangent that really covered the rest of today's daf. And that is that there are 10 miracles that occurred in the base of Mikdash, as per the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. So we quoted the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, and we noted that it doesn't really get us to the number 10. And so for the remainder of today's daf, we did mostly accounting, trying to get to the number 10. The Mishnah said 10, it's got to be 10. And so we supplemented with brises, we consolidated categories, and we ended up getting to the number 10. As long as we mentioned the miracle, so we just tied up a couple of loose ends. The idea that there was a pillar of smoke going up, so the Gemara says, I don't think there was, at least not during the second base of Mikdash. So the Gemara went and smoothed over all the miracles. There were differences between the first and second base of Mikdash, but the Mishnah and Pirkei Avos does not seem to be those differences. Those differences we highlighted in today's daf as well on the Amud Beis, right? The differences of Aaron, Kaparos, Teruvim, Eish, Shechina, Ruach HaKodesh, Urim V'Tumim. So those are differences between the first and second base of Mikdash, but presumably everything else was even in that regard. And then we talked about the pillars, and the idea is that the smoke didn't scatter the pillar. I'm sorry, the wind didn't scatter the pillar. However, if the pillar bent in a particular direction, so that would tell us what kind of season we had to look forward to. Okay, Adkan. Right.